The Rundown, Part 10, A Far Lost Story by John Miro.
Twilight fell upon the darkening road. I found myself again alone. Street lights went out by one, by two, by three. Now reveled in the shadows that had grown. Yes, I reveled in the darkness I'd known.
Jane leaned against the window, arms crossed, savoring the look of confusion on Murdo's face. She didn't like the overgrown cyborg when Samad had promoted him to be her second, and she didn't like him now he'd been promoted into her old job. That was why he was here, wasn't it? She wondered. To gloat? No, she realized. He was confused to find her here, she remembered. Studiously keeping her thought process off her face, Jane was suddenly sure there was more. She felt the wheels turning in her head and let herself marvel at how fast they spun for just a moment. She'd never been dumb, and her intuition and empathy had made her a great cop, before they fired and jailed her for the crime of being sick. But Jane Adda had a whole other cognitive gear. Even after weeks with Adda in her head, even knowing that while he slept soundly, he entrusted her with his beloved roadhouse, it amazed her the way facts and insights clicked together inside her head now. She'd thought she'd known the facts about hides. She'd learned the urban myths as a kid and some of the facts as a cop. None of that came close to preparing her for becoming one. She flashed back to just a few days after their joining, to how she sweated and trembled as her body fought to reject his cells from her body. Back to when they still passed out, took turns sharing her body, their body now, every few hours. She remembered waking on the floor in his bathroom, bigger than any apartment she'd ever had, to see a flashing light on a message slate on the floor beside her, and a scrap of paper on the floor beside that, with a number, and the words, "Learn the number, eat the paper," scrawled in a trembling hand that looked an awful lot like her own. That was the most frustrating thing about being a hide. Contrary to the way the joined were portrayed in bad books and movies, there really wasn't a voice in your head. In fact, she'd only ever had one talk with Adda Morzenko Hazen in those few minutes before the Hazen part had died. The closest relationship Jane had ever experienced in her life. And other than the occasional inexplicable intuition or point of trivia, they only ever communicated through exchanged video notes and words in the journal they shared the password to. And they both preferred words to the videos, as the two of them were not yet used to the sight or sound of Jane's voice delivering the thoughts of the symbiote now residing in her spinal fluid and brainstem. "Think of me like a drug," Adda had written on the glowing slate. That's what Morse said it felt like when we were first joined. Jane could see the comparison. Her thoughts were still her own. Parts of Adda might be floating in her body, but they were separate beings. From the first time she'd passed out, though, there'd been incomplete transmissions being swapped along their shared nerves and neurons, and fragments of thoughts, emotions, dreams, and jumbles of symbols and half-translated alien memories. As the days progressed, she accepted the fact that she had changed. Her walk was now different. Her interest in finer clothes had returned, and then some. And when she dreamed, as Adda woke to carry on his life and business, a life and business he had kindly and completely shared with Jane, down to legal documents, passwords, and DNA access to the roadhouse, she had dreams that were stranger than any drug-induced trip she'd ever been on. Adda's first host, Morse, had been a Manta. They had joined even before their ship found itself trapped here in Farlost. Jane wasn't sure she'd ever get used to the flying dreams, but she'd be comforted by the scrap of a dream of flying over a blue-green forest, laughing and biting gently at the tails of her children until her dying day. She arched an eyebrow and smiled coolly. "Samad gave you my old job. Times must be tough." Murdo did an admirable job of making eye contact and keeping things casual, but Jane could tell he was interfacing with Semat hurriedly back at home. She could almost sympathize with her old boss staring through his new enforcer's eyes at his old enforcer. An old enforcer who had disappeared without a trace for days, then weeks, only to be seen walking the streets of Piertown in fancy clothes and sleeping at the roadhouse. "I'm pleased you and Semat are trying so hard to be diplomatic about my recent elevation in status. I'm sure you thought I'd run off, and I'm equally sure you've set a kill contract on me for abandoning my station. I'm also going to assume you're canceling that order right now, so we can get to the business of what you came here to discuss with me." "You're Ada?" Murdo said, obviously having some trouble storing the data. Just a few weeks ago, Ada had been a frail old man. Now he was a beautiful woman, if she did say so herself, and one that had taught him not to cross her often enough before. Jane gave Murdo an imperious nod. "You drink light brown ale, Florian label only, and you spent your last two social visits bedding the blonde boy with the dimples. What's his name?" She snapped her fingers. "Dana." Murdo grew quiet, a deep scowl on his face. She laughed. "Now I've passed the audition. You should congratulate me. Half of me would still be doing your job if it weren't for my luck. You know, right place, right time." She waved at one of Murdo's eyes, silver wire-laced eyes. "Hi, Semat. Kiss and make up?" Murdo's jaw clenched tighter, but relaxed a moment later. "In light of your new partnership with Ada and your expert service, Semat is canceling the bounty on your head. There's no honor to defend here. Jane Kelly didn't break her contract with us. Jane Kelly died when she joined with Ada. Have you chosen what to add to your name?" "Ah, we're a free sentient again. That's a relief. Though I'll bet that chap's your ass." Jane smiled, grateful to have the nasty business of a kill order dispensed with. "We are Jane Kelly, Ada, Moors, Zenko, Hazen." Murdo nodded. "And who's driving right now?" That cut the power to Jane's smile. "Show a little respect. This body isn't a timeshare condominium." Murdo clucked. "Not quite true." Jane's tone cooled dangerously, looking through Murdo as if Semat was standing right behind him instead of monitoring his feed from afar. "Really, Semat, I expected a little more cultural sensitivity from your proxy." The armored man held up his hands. His tone became conciliatory. "All apologies, Jane Kelly, Ada, Morzenkohazen. I will admit I had a competitive working relationship with your host body before your joining, but I will choose my words more carefully in future." "I'd advise that," Jane said, although her tone seemed to challenge him to choose less carefully, just one more time. A hint of a laugh from Murdo. The fool always had an inflated opinion of his own abilities, Jane thought, pleasantly surprised to feel far less insulted and riled than she'd expected to. Something else to thank Ada for. "I've known other Hydes," Murdo continued. "Joined for life, yes. A new individual being, sure. But there are still two brains, two personalities, and only one can control the body at a time." Jane ignored Murdo's lick of attitude, looking bored as she signaled one of her staff with a flick of her wrist. "I accept your apology. Your crudeness will not be reflected in my dealings with Semat and his organization this time." Murdo nodded back, semi-graciously. Both wore their game faces now. She directed him to a close-by table, now magically emptied of its previous guests, cleaned and with three drinks set atop it. One a Florian label brown ale. She circled the table to sit before two glasses, one a whiskey, neat, for Ada, and one a beer, she didn't know or care what kind, for Jane. A fragment of old memory came to her mind, and her smile quirked. Apparently the combination was called a Boilermaker. "Now, what can we do for your organization?" Murdo's eyebrows raised a fraction of an inch as Jane tossed the whiskey back, then followed up with a healthy third of the beer. Not at all ladylike, she knew, and certainly not what she'd planned before sitting down. "What the hell?" She was still making up this new life of hers as she went. Semhat requires discreet transport out of Kasti for two. No mere tavern owner, Ada was one of the oldest sentients in Loklaw, perhaps all of Farlost. He maintained a centuries-old ledger of business with clientele from every circle of society. He knew where the bodies were buried, where debts were owed, and he made it a rule to know the cost entailed in every transaction he provided before he said yes. Who's traveling? Murdo looked honestly uncomfortable. Semad is willing to put a substantial marker in your book, not to mention bending gravity with the loo he'll lay on you in exchange for not asking that question. Jane only had a taste of Ada's business enterprises, but she'd already figured out he was a broker for just about anything in Loklaw, not all of it savory. In fact, some of it was pretty rough stuff, and that was coming from an ex-cop and ex-mob enforcer. Still, she'd learned enough to trust he had a complex moral code guided by over 100 years of life experience, crossing 3 hosts, 4 now, counting herself. And everything he did was guided by a love for this city and a respect for life in all its shapes and sizes. Her head was getting dizzy. The beer was hitting her harder than it used to, back when she had been trying to drink herself to death. Funny thing how an alien symbiotic repairing all that self-inflicted bodily damage could actually make you a cheaper date. She took a deep breath and focused on Murdo again. Noted. Traveling where, then? Jane knew Murdo to be ruthless. In the months he'd been racking up a violent reputation and climbing up Semat's ranks, she'd never found out what he believed in, who he loved. She didn't know if there was anything he wouldn't do, or anything he'd risk his own life to defend. All of which made her eyes narrow when this cold-blooded killer let an emotion flicker across his face. Was that squeamishness? Disgust? Interested now, Jane leaned in to ask another question when her Ada magnified awareness of the room sent her a warning. She looked around. People were leaving in 2s and 3s. One of the roadhouse's door staff was walking briskly toward her. Jane asked the question with her face.
Excuse me, Jane, there's been a hijacking on the pier, a cargo hauler. There's a video of the ship opening fire on a police ship returning to the city.
Murdo and Jane simultaneously bolted to their feet and rushed the wall-side window. Both conjured up feeds on the window displaying different angles of the same blurry image captured from various external wall cameras. A small silver ship with smooth lines and wide wingspan, tracer fire from the projectiles extending between the long cargo ship heading for the smaller craft. Jane froze. She knew that ship. It was Willer. Nick's ship. Up over the wall, a flash of orange lit up the sky. Murdo made a curt bow. Another time, Jane, Ada, more Zenkohazen. Big things happening. Jane's eyes dismissed him and returned to the still frame of Willer's cockpit exploding. Her knees felt weak as years of hard mixed feelings ignited inside her. Her betrayer. Her friend. Her partner. Only Ada's silent strength kept the panic at bay, kept her from sagging against the wall, fists pounding in fear. Chunks of debris rocketed high above the wall on plumes of black smoke, and Jane did slam her fists into the wall, did press her nose to the glass, eyes widening. Was that Willer? Was the old ship gone? Was Nick dead? You have been listening to The Rundown, a Farlost story, written by John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Opening music, Everything Is Not What It Appears, kindly provided by Nate Maingard at natemaingard.com. Closing music, Full On by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com. If you like what you hear, you can become a patron and support more stories at patreon.com/servingworlds. Thanks for listening. See you next week.